Spanish ships first set anchor off the coast of Mexico in 1519. 100 years later, 9 out of every 10 native Mexicans was dead, mostly from disease. Smallpox germs from Europe were responsible for the first colonial plague in Mexico in 1520. But now some scientists say there were 2 subsequent epidemics that may have been caused by viruses native to the region. And those diseases may have been brought on by extreme drought. Ingrid Lobet has our report.
Although Dr. Rodolfo Acuña Soto is an epidemiologist, often you'll find him in a Catholic church, the guardian of so much of Mexico's past. He's a student of his country's rich history of plague, trying to understand what might happen in future epidemics. Here, and not for the first time, he talks a priest into opening a dusty archive. From a back room at the main cathedral in Oaxaca, a young cleric brings out a leather-bound city record dating to the late 1700s. It's 1.5 feet high and 3 inches thick.
Gorgeous. Look at these letters scripted in gold, pure cellulose paper imported from Spain. And how much must this weigh? 11 pounds?
The records paint a vivid picture of death in colonial Mexico. Here, Acuña reads from an old municipal burial record.
Enteritis, enterocolitis, enterocolitis, tuberculosis.
Fever, tuberculosis, chickenpox, gastroenteritis, enteritis, enterocolitis.
No one, it seems, died of old age.
Alferecía, interesante, fiebre.
Infant seizure, pneumonia. Fever, pneumonia, typhoid fever, cholera, diarrhea, diarrhea, cholera.
Even though the sweeping plagues happened centuries ago, they're well documented. One reason is providence. It turns out King Philip of Spain sent his personal physician to the New World just as the Great Plague of 1576 was sweeping Mexico. So Dr. Hernandez, the king's doctor, perhaps the best-trained Western physician in the world at the time, witnessed the epidemic. He was examining patients, performing autopsies, and making notes about a plague so violent it would still be in the history books 400 years later. Yet these notes lay forgotten until Dr. Acuña and another research team stumbled upon them.
The descriptions are horrendous. It started with fever, chills, and in 4 or 5 days they died. They bled through the noses, ears, mouth, everywhere. They become jaundiced, yellow. And also they have this kind of ulcers in the lips and the genitals. They become mad, kind of insane, absolutely. And they were very anxious and enormous thirst.
Dr. John Marr is a New York epidemiologist. He and his partner, Dr. Barry Kirikoff, an architectural historian, have been looking at this same 16th century record of the king's physician, as well as even older native accounts of epidemics in the Americas. Dr. Marr agrees it's clear that the common belief that Mexican Indians were killed off by smallpox is not scientifically viable.
It was clear to me, at least, because Dr. Kirikoff had collected a number of primary resource papers written by Spaniards that the signs and symptoms of this disease that killed so many Aztecs included bleeding from the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, the vaginal bleeding, bleeding from the stomach, bleeding into the urine, bleeding into the skin, and a fulminant rapid death within 3 or 4 days.
Marr and Acuña say modern medicine recognizes these symptoms. They're characteristic of a class that includes Ebola fever, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and certain kinds of dengue, a class Americans have been hearing more about recently, hemorrhagic fevers.
I would say unequivocally, I had fortunately had some guidance from some of the experts at the CDC. I've talked with many people who are expert virologists and epidemiologists, and I think they would all conclude that it was a hemorrhagic fever.
But what that disease was, whether it was transmitted by insect or mammal, and under what conditions, are still open questions. One hypothesis is tied closely to drought, a calamitous drought stretching across North and Central America, one far worse than the Oklahoma Dust Bowl. A team of researchers is working in the forests of Oaxaca's Sierra Madre Mountains, taking core samples out of the oldest trees, mapping that famous drought, the 16th century mega drought, in detail. Because of its perch on the Pacific, Mexico has felt the cutting edge of Earth's changing weather patterns throughout the centuries.
Whoa, baby. Beautiful. Yeah, this is a nice tree. It's lovely. Okay, sometimes getting it started is the hardest thing, which is why I use this starter. But,
Malcolm yeah. Cleveland and Matthew Terrell are tree ring researchers, or dendrochronologists, from the University of Arkansas. Cleveland crouches beside a Douglas fir.
Probably 250, 300 years old.
The cores are pencil thin. They say it doesn't harm the tree at all.
Break the core off.
Terrell explains Douglas fir is famous for its ability to reliably put on new wood every year, wood that varies in thickness with rainfall.
Douglas fir is like the holy grail for dendrochronology, not only because it has an incredibly extensive range, but it has a very good climate signal almost everywhere you find it.
Using the core samples and slices of downed trees, the University of Arkansas team, together with Mexican foresters, have painted the first real climate history of Mexico, including a map of the mega drought.
All right.
Epiphany can come when unlike spheres collide. Epidemiologist Dr. Acuña Soto just happened to be in the audience when the Arkansas researchers presented their climate charts at a conference. He saw that there were two tall tent poles of peak drought in Mexico just at the same time as the two most notorious 16th century plagues.
Then very, very interesting pattern appeared. Very severe, a long drought, and then suddenly within the drought is period of rain, exactly that at the time the epidemic appears.
Dr. Acuña and the Arkansas team began collaborating and developed a hypothesis that involves drought, brief rain, and disease-carrying rodents.
If water becomes scarce in the countryside, rats and in general all the rodents get kind of a cluster around the very scarce water sources, and this is a huge fight among them. Most of them die, but very few survivors. They have to fight all the time. If you have in this population, you put water and then plain full of food, suddenly they will explode, but the virus will also explode.
This is very similar to what many scientists believe happened in 1993 in the American Southwest with the hantavirus outbreak that killed 26 people. Rain interrupted a drought. Suddenly, the mice had more food and their numbers exploded, bringing them and their deadly feces into more contact with people. But the idea that such a rodent-borne epidemic wiped out the Mexican Indian population 4 centuries ago is new.
This story of Cocolisti and the whole idea that a lot of what I learned in college about Mexican history and the history of the New World could be, you know, wrong, basically. I was really shocked by that.
Acuña and the others stress the drought-rodent connection is only a hypothesis. There is another theory to explain why rodents might suddenly have come into more contact with people. Doctors Marr and Kirikoff suggest that when the Spanish demanded the Indians grow and store wheat, it meant people moving in on the rodents' territory, and the stored wheat created a magnet for them.
Hello. I want you all to lift my hat
to see how fuerte I am.
2 days later, back in Oaxaca, Matthew Terrell stumbles out of the forest with 40 pounds of slices from downed Douglas fir, imprinting his pack straps onto his bones. They'll take the slices and the core samples back to Arkansas to analyze to see if they've pushed the climate record back or at least bolstered their shakier data.
I mean, I felt like I was going to blow my knee out, man.
Though they're fascinated by the past, their real hope is that it will help understand current climate change. Dr. Acuña, too, believes climate could influence future plagues, and he likes to remind Americans that great civilizations like Mexico's Mayan and Thule empires collapsed in mid-splendor, probably because of desiccating drought.
Those epidemics happen in the worst drought in the last 2,000 years. We have been very, very lucky not to have something like that. And nobody can say that we will have that in the future.
It's hard to say if we're in the middle of our splendor as a civilization. Our mastery of agriculture can seem breathtaking, but it still depends on rainfall. It's something Acuña says he can't help contemplating during his commute, as he crests the hills that separate suburban Cuernavaca from the smoky bowl of Mexico City and looks down on the largest concentration of people in human history. For Living on Earth, I'm Ingrid Lobet.